Now we talk about biology. Mainstream biology is based on genetic determinism, the idea that our genes hold the blueprint for who we are, how we look, and what diseases we might get.
Biology researcher Michael Skinner says there might be a little more to the story, that who we are may also be affected by the toxins our ancestors were exposed to a couple few generations ago.
Michael Skinner is a professor of biological sciences at Washington State University, and he won an American Ingenuity Award from Smithsonian Magazine for his research. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Well, your discovery was the result of a mistake. What happened?
Correct. Many scientific discoveries are more serendipitous, but we were studying the effects of environmental toxicants on generations to come using a rat model, and we basically got a phenotype or a trait in the first generation, and mistakenly a fellow in the lab bred that animal to make a F2 generation, which would be the great-grandchild. And lo and behold, when we looked, it had the same disease characteristics, and we took it out four generations and basically had this disease characteristic of very, like 90% of the animals being affected, kept appearing at that level for four generations to come, which suggested it was not a classic genetic phenomena.
How big a deal is this when you look at what we know and believe about DNA today?
So what we study is called epigenetics. It's the things that are around the DNA that regulate how the DNA functions. And so what we study is these sort of chemical modifications of the DNA called epigenetics. And what we've identified is a form of epigenetic inheritance. So this is a non-genetic form of inheritance that gets passed forward to all subsequent generations. And this is a totally new view of what we inherit from our parents or grandparents and so forth.
Now, you and your researchers, you focused on rats and, as I understand it, exposed them to various chemicals, things like BPA, for instance, other things like that, and then saw that that had sort of changed the way the DNA was passed along. Can you explain sort of why this isn't exactly DNA we're talking about anymore?
Sure. So the DNA sequence is very important, and it followed the inheritance of that follows what's called Mendelian genetics, classic genetics. And what this is more of a chemical modification of the DNA. A small group called a methyl group gets attached to the DNA, and what we've found is that can become permanently attached. So what it is your sperm or egg that you're passing to the next generation has that in it. It'll go into the next generation, and as they make sperm and egg down the line, it'll carry that same imprint, and it'll essentially keep going from generation to generation. So truly, what your great-grandmother was exposed to in terms of a toxicant such as DDT or dioxin and so forth can change that early on in life, and you're going to pass it on to your grandkids.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So traditionally, according to what we may have thought we understood about DNA, my great-grandmother is exposed to it. It doesn't necessarily result in a mutation. So therefore, her great-grandchildren should be okay and not have that mutation. But you're saying, no, that's really not the way this is working.
That's absolutely correct. Right now, the current dogma for where disease comes from involves the idea that there's mutations in the DNA that's causing that disease. Yet when we look carefully in disease populations, very little, actually less than 1% of a population with disease actually has an identifiable mutation that can be correlated to the disease. And so this actually provides an additional mechanism, which we didn't know before, which really opens up a lot of doors for new therapeutics and diagnostics we didn't have.
Therapeutics and diagnostics. Okay, because I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, chemical companies might be liable for something that people were exposed to generations ago. What sorts of pluses are there to dealing with this?
Well, you have to remember that when the chemical companies came up with these, more than likely there was not data around to suggest that the chemicals they were using were bad. When they came up with plastics in the 1950s, they had no idea that bisphenol A was going to be harmful. It took us 20 or 30 years later we sort of found that out. So the demands that the public has is creating these products that we have in the environment. So the public needs to take responsibility for some of that. But in terms of the upside, yes, potentially in the future, we might be able to take an individual when they're 20, do a diagnostic assay for epigenetics, determine what they or their ancestors were exposed to early in life, and then what disease they're going to get later in life. And with that information, we can design therapeutic and intervention strategies to prevent the disease from developing. That's called preventative medicine. We've not really been able to do it effectively because we didn't have those early stage diagnostics.
Do you have any sense of what kind of diseases could be caused by exposure to toxins?
So we've seen everything from kidney disease, infertility in males and females, breast cancer, prostate disease, immune abnormalities, behavioral effects, obesity, essentially across the paradigm. Most of the diseases we see, metabolic syndrome, like diabetes, most of these diseases can be correlated to these epigenetic shifts.
What kind of response have you gotten about this so far?
Well, with the paradigm for genetic determinism being so predominant, it takes a lot of effort to sort of get people to change their minds. So the biggest pushback we've had is certainly initially from the drug companies and chemical industries, but also government agencies. And the scientists take a lot of convincing. So it's a slow process. Generally, these big paradigm shifts in science take a generation, and I suspect that'll be the case here as well.
Now, you've likened the way that these toxins act as a burr that sticks to the DNA. Will you be working on a way to sort of decouple it from the DNA?
So unfortunately, it's sort of like a genetic mutation where you have a base pair change in the DNA sequence. You can't really fix that. And these permanently programmed epigenetic mutations, what we call epimutations, also really won't probably be able to be fixed, at least with our current technology or anything in the near future. But like I mentioned, we can use the presence of those mutations as a diagnostic to come up for treatment. So even though, so therefore we may not be able to fix it, but we may be able to treat it in the future.
What kind of treatment are we talking about? Do you know?
So if we know, for example, that your mammary epithelial cell has a certain epigenetic signature, which is changing its function in a certain way, to then give you a susceptibility to develop breast cancer down the line, we can earlier in life, let's say in your late 20s or 30s, come up with a therapeutic to shift how that cell's functioning and prevent the disease from developing.
Hmm. Well, this discovery, as we're talking about it, it's led to a whole new field. How does this change the way we think about toxins and chemicals in general in the environment around us?
Well, it certainly will give us a lot of molecular tools, which we didn't have before, to look for environmental exposures and correlate those to disease. And so that's going to be a big boom in the field of toxicology for sure. But it also suggests that many of the things that we thought were relatively safe in our environment, we need to probably be more conscientious about to remove them or at least reduce them in terms of exposures.
What kind of things are you talking about?
So probably one of the biggest exposures we have is our water source and the water we're exposed to and drink. Many of the aquifers that we pull our water from, we don't really know oftentimes the contamination levels. And so people need to be very cautious about their water. So using purified water, not only to drink, but also in their homes, is probably something they need to move towards. And there are actually things you can do about that. The other main source of contamination is more than likely your nutrition, your food intake. So what kinds of food, where they come from, and so forth, need to be considered. And, of course, if you're in occupational sort of exposure, if the people are in certain industries with occupational exposures, they need to try to reduce that, particularly when, let's say, females are pregnant. That's the most sensitive time, and so fetal development. So women that are in gestation really need to be very cautious about what they're exposed to.
So what's next for you? What epigenetic studies do you currently have underway, and how might they affect us?
So we are looking more carefully at the molecular mechanisms involved in this phenomena to gain some insights in terms of how it works. But one of our big projects is to actually take these animal studies and these epigenetic signatures we have and translate that to the human. So we have a few human studies getting started to look at cohorts of patients with certain exposures or not to see if there's epigenetic signatures we can use and make the correlations into disease they have. So that translational research is really going to be a big boom for potentially helping human health.
Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
We've been speaking to Michael Skinner, professor of biological sciences at Washington State University.